Since Botox has become an almost run-of-the-mill beauty treatment, coloring your hair seems almost trivial. But as Anne Creamer discovered, deciding to dye or not to dye can stir people's deepest feelings about aging and whether it should happen gracefully, authentically, or begrudgingly. I spoke with Ms. Creamer about her own experiences this past fall when she dropped by to discuss her book, Going Gray, What I Learned About Beauty, Sex, Work, Motherhood, Authenticity, and Everything Else That Really Matters, and we thought you might enjoy hearing it again. I started by asking Anne Creamer when she first started coloring her hair.
I first started coloring my hair when I was about 25.
Why? You're so young.
Well,
were you already going
genetics,
gray?
I was already going gray. And, you know, I had started, I think, like a lot of women in my generation, using sun-in when we were teenagers and sitting out in the sun and baking with our iodine on our bodies. And that sort of transition point from using sun-in and streaking my hair to then having the gray, I just sort of kind of continued along that route.
And sticking to one color over the years?
No. I'd like to say that I had, but I had everything from that kind of sun-in blonde to then I went to a kind of bittersweet colors, one of my first colors.
Bittersweet? What does that mean?
Kind of an orangey, reddy, auburn color that doesn't exist in nature, in fact.
So people knew that you were dyeing your hair.
People knew that I was dyeing my hair. And
but the artificiality was part of it.
The artificiality was part of it, and it was sort of fun. My first job when I moved to New York was working at the now-defunct Manufacturers Hanover Trust Company. And when I was there, everybody I worked with was very corporate, very Brooks Brothers, and it struck me that one way I could sort of differentiate myself was to change my hair color, be a little, you know, avant-garde, as it were.
The way men grow beards and shave off beards. I had a hair cutter who suggested to me when I was young and still dark hair that I should start dyeing my hair then because when I turned gray, nobody would know.
Radio hair?
No, that was before radio as well. I didn't listen to him, and now look at what happened. My guest is Anne Creamer, who's written a book called Going Gray, published by Little Brown. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So what inspired you to stop coloring and let your hair go naturally gray?
I had one of those moments that I think we all experience periodically where the fog sort of lifts. And I'd gone on a trip with my daughter and another friend, Akiko Bush, a writer, and Myra Kalman, a writer. And Myra had sent me photographs of the trip, and I looked at Aki and my daughter and me, and I was in the middle of them with my hair almost ebony. It was so dark a mahogany. And I thought, I looked fake. I looked phony. And it disturbed me, so I decided to see what my natural hair color might have been.
Because you had no idea.
And
you know, it looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
In fact, one wonders why anybody would want to alter it. It looks totally appropriate to you.
Thank you.
But you couldn't have known that.
I had no clue. I really, before I started, because of the way my roots were growing in, I assumed I was actually going to be sort of almost shocking white. And that was kind of a cool idea to me. I thought, I could look like, you know, Halle Berry in the X-Men or something. But no, I came in purely gray, and here I am.
Have you ever calculated how much money you spent on keeping your hair in those various colors?
I think we all deliberately don't think about that very consciously. I think there's a sense we know the order of magnitude of what we're spending. And so I never really had. It was a kind of a non-negotiable expense for me. And yet, when I decided to stop, I thought, now let me really sit down and figure it out. So I went through the rigor of kind of figuring out what it had been going every 3 weeks to get my roots done. And it disturbed me to find out that it was almost $65,000 in total over the 25 years.
The same sort of thing people do when they quit smoking.
Exactly, exactly. It's a very liberating kind of thing to do, in fact.
So Akiko Bush was here to talk about her memoir this summer.
Yeah.
Was she supportive?
Were
your other friends
supportive?
Oh, she was
fabulously supportive. I mean, my friends who were already gray-haired, and Akiko is one of the few who's actually my age. Most of my other friends who were gray-haired were in their mid-60s to late-60s. And they were all very supportive of it. And not surprisingly, there's a kind of sisterhood of us out there now.
What about your husband and your daughters?
Husband, who had lived with me through all the iterations of my hair color, I think could have cared less.
Well, he's let his hair go gray.
His hair go gray, and his mother was gray, and his siblings are gray. So it was not an unusual thing for him. And it was just sort of one more color for me in the scheme of colors. My eldest daughter, who had dyed her hair sort of pinks and blues when she was in her early teens, was totally fine. And then my younger daughter, who was in eighth grade at the time, was not quite so enthusiastic. She actually said to me, and I think she was joking, but kind of seriously, "Oh, God, Mommy, I don't want to have an old mommy at school." And she wasn't far off the mark. I am the only one of her peers who has gray hair. You know, the other mothers don't.
Well, when did this happen? I mean, I remember only her hairdresser knows for sure that slogan, which suggested that women were concerned about looking artificial.
Right. Well, it was an interesting thing. In 1950, according to Clairol, only about 7% of women dyed their hair. Now, 65% of women in America dye their hair. And I think we know certain neighborhoods in our own community where that number is probably closer to 100%. And what I think happened was women started going into the workforce at exactly the same time that easy home coloring came into sort of the vogue. And I somehow think that sort of stepping outside of the home, getting into the workforce, having the freedom to color your hair got kind of inextricably linked with what it meant to be a professional woman. And we've never looked back.
Is there a difference between doing it at home or having a professional do it to you?
If you ask the professionals, yes.
Oh, you went to the professionals.
I went to the professionals. An awful lot of women do choose to do home dyeing, although, again, in the kind of non-negotiable sense of the expense of it, I did a survey of women across the country and asked them, women who made $25,000 to $50,000 spent $60 a month on their hair color, and women who made $100,000 to $250,000 a month only spent $70 a month on their hair color. So it's a very fine distinction. You know, all women spend this money.
When you spoke to those women, did they tell you whether it was important to look like it was their own color or whether they were perfectly happy with it looking artificial as it was with you in some cases?
I think the older women, I think younger women tend to do it sort of as a way to play with identity and have fun the way I was doing it when I was 25. I think the older you get, there's this sort of sense that one kind of wants to recapture when they think they looked their best. So in talking to a lot of hair colorists around the country, they could tell me with, you know, precision when a woman thought she looked her best, whether it was 16, whether it was 25, whether it was 35, based on the color she wanted and the cut that she wanted.
But the colors aren't brunette, blonde. They're sunset blaze, sparkling amber.
Yes. They're all meant to be very exciting and kind of colorful. And there's very few, you know, good colors associated with gray. You know, there's no kind of palomino or whatever they might choose.
Alpine glacier, I would
Correct.
Think would be nice.
That'd be very good.
If there still are alpine glaciers.
True.
So how does a 24/7 media affect ideas of aging gracefully? Do you think that one of the other reasons we've seen this change is that the boomer generation came into being?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we're at a really interesting inflection point in our culture. In 1900, our average life expectancy was 47. Today, it's almost 80. So we've never actually lived with such a large group of men and women aging in front of our very eyes. And so as the youngest of the 77 million boomers now turns 43, I think that how do we want to look, how do we want to feel, how do we want to portray ourselves is going to become increasingly sort of a hot topic and issue for people.
So when you decided to go gray, how did you affect the transition? A listener wants to know, how could you stand the gray roots coming in? Did you wear a turban for months?
I wish I had on some level. It was a nightmare, if truth be told. I mean, I'd had two bad experiences with very short hair, so I didn't want to go that route and have both really short hair I didn't like and hideous roots coming in at the same time. So I tried to do it keeping my hair long. And the way you do that is you sort of pull in highlights throughout it and then you put toners over it. But at a certain point, you look dreadful as you have kind of 6 months of growth coming out in your color at the bottom. And eventually I succumbed and cut my hair off.
Well, you could have dyed it gray, couldn't you?
No, you can't, unfortunately, because then you still have color.
You have to strip it.
Even if you strip it, it's Leonard, off-channel, I can tell you all about the nuances of that, but it's really complicated. You can't just do it in one swell foop, you know?
My guest is Ann Creamer, K-R-E-A-M-E-R. Her book, Going Gray, What I Learned About Beauty, Sex, Work, Motherhood, Authenticity, and Everything Else That Really Matters. It's published by Little Brown. We will continue our conversation after this. And we're back with Ann Creamer, who is the former executive vice president and worldwide creative director of Nickelodeon, Nick at Night. She has written a book called Going Gray, What I Learned About Beauty, Sex, Work, Motherhood, Authenticity, and Everything Else That Really Matters, published by Little Brown. And this whole thing started when you pitched the story of Going Gray to More magazine?
Well, my entire life, the only way I can successfully sort of complete big life-changing projects is to tell as many people as I possibly can, and then I'm sort of trapped into whether it's quitting smoking or, you know, changing jobs or whatever it might be. So I thought a surefire way to allow me to kind of see the conclusion of the miserable process of letting my roots grow out would be to write about it and be photographed for it, and that's what I did.
Humiliate yourself
more
in public.
Precisely.
Does it matter whether you're gray in New York or in Los Angeles or San Francisco? Do different cities react differently?
One would think so on some level, although for the piece that I wrote for Time, I asked...
That's last week's issue.
Yeah, last week's issue with the volunteerism cover. I asked women across the country to go into sort of their local communities and spend 15 minutes in different kinds of areas and count for me the sort of number of age-appropriate women within those communities who had their hair gray. And it was Portland and Arizona and Denver and Chicago and Boston, all over, you know, Atlanta. And in fact, the numbers of women who had their hair gray were very similar to those that you'd find in New York City or L.A. I mean, it is... a saturated universe out there of people who find that it's important that they dye their hair.
But I suspect, based on your experiences, that one of the assumptions that men will find them more attractive if they're not gray turns out not to be true. In fact, in many cases, men encourage women to go gray.
They do. I mean, one of the fascinating things is that I've been getting tons of mail from men writing to me saying, like, thank you so much for doing this. I've been talking to my wife. I'm a 41-year-old guy living in Seattle, and I've been encouraging my wife to do this. And now I'm going to send this to my wife and to my mother-in-law, and this is great.
So, and Mayor Bloomberg encouraged your friend Anne LaFarge,
yes, he did,
to go gray.
Yeah, it was kind of great.
Well, he's gray himself. But yeah. Do you think that's the reason? Maybe more men than women suspect actually prefer women to look like they look.
I think they do. I mean, again, in the Time poll, Time piece that I wrote, they polled their readership, and almost 90% of the people were afraid that gray hair would be a detriment to them socially, yet only about 70% of them thought it would be professionally the case. So I think there's this sort of false sense of what matters.
Well, you did real research here. You went to Match.com to experiment. Was your husband, Kurt Anderson, at all concerned that you were... looking for dates on Match.com?
Not so much, because he helped me think through how I position. In fact, he was a journalist by nature and so, and by training. And
you might have met somebody fabulous.
Unlikely. I've been with him 30 years, so I can't kind of imagine that. But it was the only pseudo-scientific way that I could figure out how to kind of just have hair color alone be the one thing that could sort of determine what people's responses might be.
So what did you see when you looked at the pictures? Were men more likely to be gray at a certain age than women?
Well, I looked at the pictures, and yes, there were more men who were gray on Match.com than there were women. But my particular guinea pig exercise was to post myself in New York, Chicago, and L.A., first with my hair brown. I had to Photoshop it back brown. I didn't do this until my hair was already gray. And then 3 months later, I put myself up at the exact same profile that I was 50 years old, the entire thing clear, but with my hair gray. And in each one of those three markets, three times as many men Winked me, the coy term of art for wanting to talk further, and Match.com, with my hair gray than they had with my hair brown. It really did kind of blow my mind.
And then you brought your research to bars as well.
Oh, I did. I did. I went out, since I hadn't been to bars since the Carter administration, I thought, maybe I should go out and see what would happen if I got picked up. And again, with the encouragement of my husband, I went out with a mutual friend of ours who's a journalist and another girlfriend of mine. And we went to the Maritime Bar and to the Soho Grand and the different bars around the city and just sort of tried to see, what would happen in different places if I, were sitting at a bar alone with gray hair.
Was some different than the other? Is Soho Grand different than Pete's Tavern, for example?
Yes.
Soho Grand wanted you with darker hair.
Soho Grand wanted me to be about 25. I mean, there were places where, I felt like I was the mother of the people at the bar, which is not a highly successful way to go out. Pete's Tavern, on the other hand, though, it was the height of the NCAA basketball final. So it was filled with a bunch of sort of normal guys from the neighborhood watching the games, listening to music, hanging out. And if Central Casting could have sent me the guy that I ended up sitting next to, I couldn't have done better. He was a young merchant marine with quote-unquote top secret clearance status in town to visit his father, who was unwell. So, that was fun.
And it didn't bother him that you were gray.
So no.
So is it really just that Hollywood and television have convinced many women that they shouldn't go gray?
I think that there is a huge dearth of role models for us. I mean, we just came back from vacation in England, and I think that the ratio of women who color their hair there is almost the opposite to here. I think about only 30% color their hair in England.
Well, the Queen doesn't.
The Queen doesn't, and Judi Dench doesn't, and Vanessa Redgrave doesn't, and Helen Mirren doesn't. I mean, there's just this sort of universe of women with every spectrum of hair color that you could have in terms of the gray palette. And I think here there aren't any. If the ones that exist you can name on one hand. It's Emmylou Harris, the former Governor Ann Richards, who I was lucky enough to interview for the book. Jane Alexander perhaps would come up. And I mean, you're hard-pressed to find anybody with gray hair.
What about in government? People want to look younger, don't they? Do men and women both dye their hair in government?
Yeah, they do. I mean, of the current crop of people in the Senate, there are 16 female senators. Not a single one of them has gray hair. And they range in age from 46 to 74. In the House, there's 70 female members, and of those, only 7 have gray hair. So I think statistically, the rule of thumb is that 50% of people will have 50% of their hair gray by the time they're 50. Now, therefore, those female senators, odds are quite a few of them have gray hair when they're 46 and up. And I think that they've been trapped into sort of believing that looking young is more valuable than perhaps looking experienced.
There are people who retain their hair color into their 60s and 70s.
Absolutely.
And
80s. Yeah, absolutely true.
But I must tell you, the shock occurred for me because my hair was dark until fairly recently. And there were listeners who used to, the angry listeners, there's always a couple, who'd send me pictures of myself and say, obvious dye job,
Right.
When it wasn't.
Right.
But then when I started having my hair cut and seeing all those gray hairs falling into my lap, it did come as a bit of a shock. I guess because my self-image was as somebody with dark hair.
Yeah, no, I know. And I think that is what still motivates a lot of women and men to continue to dye their hair.
The same way that a lot of women who grow up blonde, whose hair darkens a bit, but still remain kind of dirty blonde, they will lighten their hair in many cases to be more like they were when they were teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories of women taking their children into their colorist and saying, I want you to match their color for me.
A woman writes from Greenpoint, by the way. This is a listener. I went gray at 25. I'm 34 now. I was just thinking yesterday about not coloring my hair any longer. I decided I'll wait until I'm 40. My husband was bummed. He thinks long gray hair is very sexy on a woman.
Right on. That's great.
So were you surprised by your dating versus your career research results?
Yeah, I was. I mean, again, kind of paralleling what the Time poll found in their survey, I had assumed that you know, gray hair wouldn't particularly be an issue, particularly in areas like academia or medicine or areas where you'd think engineering, it would be perhaps an asset. And as, again, part of my own one-woman kind of foray into sort of exploring this, I went and met with a couple of headhunters to sort of talk to them about, you know, what would happen if I were to go back into the corporate arena at this point. And they were very sobering. I mean,
they said dye your hair?
Well, they didn't tell me outright to dye my hair. They said that they would always encourage a candidate to be their natural selves. But on the other hand, neither of the women who I had interviewed, one in Colorado and one in New York, had a single client or a single prospective employer, female, with gray hair. So,
didn't you also speak to image consultants?
I did. I went to image consultants, again, thinking that they would be the people who would tell me out of the box, dye your hair, you know, it's pathetic that you don't, you'll never be competitive. And in fact, of the three different image consultants that I went to in Manhattan, again, Upper East Side, Upper West Side, downtown, to kind of mix it up, not a single one of them told me to dye my hair. They actually, in the kind of way that Meryl Streep had her hair in The Devil Wears Prada, figured, you know, push it up, punch it up, it'll be a kind of differentiating tool for you and make you kind of unique. So that was encouraging, but the job discrimination issue, I think, is actually real.
You talked about women in England allowing themselves, or prominent women allowing themselves to go gray, but they're less likely to have plastic surgery as well.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the hair dyeing all part of the same thing, where we're seeing more and more people getting facelifts, and all too often it doesn't achieve the effect it's intended to? It's obvious that they've had plastic surgery.
Well, I think... Right now, I think the data is that only about 1% of the population actually does do the Botox and things, although we would think it was a higher number living in New York, perhaps, and watching television. So I think the 65% versus the 1% is still a pretty profound gulf between where we are with hair color and plastic surgery. I do think...
Well, didn't you go to a plastic surgeon?
Well, I did. My daughter was having some surgery, and I was turning 40. That was the time when I dyed my hair jet black. When I thought I would be a sort of like a rock star or something at 40. And when I walked into my house, instead of being a rock star, my children burst into tears, just shocked to look at me. And one of my friends called me my evil twin. But beyond that, this whole kind of midlife 40 moment hit me. And so when my daughter was having some surgery, I asked her surgeon, you know, could he help me with the pooches on the side of my mouth? And needless to say, he was eager to do so. And I went ahead and had them kind of micro-dermed, ridiculously expensive procedure that no one noticed. And, you know, I learned my lesson. So,
but you call cosmetic procedures a slippery slope.
Yeah, I do. I think that there's this sense that, you know, once you start a couple of times in, you might look better, you might feel better, but I think we all know the examples of people in the public eye who have gone too far. And I think it's hard to kind of have the perspective to know when to stop. So I'm happy I'm at the place where I'm done with that.
You had those little thing, the pouches taken out, and that's it. Nobody,
yeah.
Now you look age appropriate again.
I don't think it changed.
We once had a TV star on the show who said that she went to a plastic surgeon and said, I don't want to look younger than I am. I just want to look the best I can at my age.
Right.
And she looked fabulous. But I think too many people want to look like they're 20 when they're 60.
Right. And I mean, I think, again, if you are a movie star or a television personality or things where the pressure to relate to the 18 to 34-year-old demo is so powerful, it would be very hard to resist doing whatever you could do to look your best.
My guest is Ann Creamer, who has worked in all sorts of places at Sesame Street on the creative team. She was at Spy, Nickelodeon, was a columnist for Martha Stewart Living and Fast Company, and she has written a memoir called Going Gray. You did a survey of women's beauty habits, and you've clustered results by skeptics, doers, followers, and preservers.
Mm-hmm.
How did the women in these various groups compare?
Skeptics, as you might assume, were the women who spent the least amount of time and the least amount of money in sort of the pursuit of looking youthful. Doers spent more time, shall we say, going to yoga classes or, you know, going to the gym, and less time on the kind of cosmetic procedures. Followers spent more time on the cosmetic procedures, a little less time on the physical, and the preservers were the opposite of skeptic, spending the most time on everything. And that, again, sort of derived out of when I did the exercise of trying to figure out how much money I had spent. I was also curious to know how much time I had spent doing all this stuff, because I think one of the things that is sort of common to a lot of boomers is that sense of waking up and thinking, whoa, there's not all that much time left. How do I really want to be spending the sort of quality years remaining to me? And I, you know, when you do the exercise of thinking about specifically how you're spending your time, it kind of changes your focus.
Do you think this is just an American thing, or do you think, forgetting about the British, the French are also engaging in this sort of thing, or other countries where people are very aware of looking their best?
I interviewed Mireille Guignot, the woman who wrote French Women Don't Get Fat, and her perspective is there in France, at least, there's more of a culture of being comfortable in your own skin. I won't do justice to her French expression for, you know, something comfort in your skin. And I think that's probably true. I mean, what's kind of surprised me is the huge response overseas that's come to me from the book. The Turkish newspaper, the leading newspaper in Istanbul, put me on the cover, having interviewed all their local celebrities, and saying, you know, this is the new sort of thing going on in America. Swiss magazines.
Well, of course, a lot of women in Turkey wear headscarves, so
yes.
You never know.
You never know. But I've just been surprised. You know, the Italians have bought it, the Brazilians have bought it. Cultures where you wouldn't necessarily think would be thinking about it seem to be thinking about it.
So in the end, why is a choice that can seem small or superficial so important?
I think hair is the first thing we use to sort of communicate to others our identity and the sort of personality that we are. And because it isn't permanent, because you can change it and it's mutable, people have played with it all their lives. Growing up working in the toy industry, as I did with Sesame Street and Nickelodeon, hair play is the single dominant thing that sort of drives young girls' purchases of toys. You know, it's our culture. It's where we are.
It's interesting that you went from Sesame Street to being recently named the Yahoo Health Expert on Aging, but... Well, you're aging gracefully. The book is Going Gray, What I Learned About Beauty, Sex, Work, Motherhood, Authenticity, and Everything Else That Really Matters, published by Little Brown. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. This was fun.